The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of ParaX, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Hello, everyone. This is Ken Bogle. You know, you hear so many great moments during each and every episode of The Odyssey Files with Dave and Mike, but if I had to really choose my favorite moment, it would have to be when the show was over.
And during the few moments that we have left, we want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
Hi, this is Elizabeth Saint, and you're listening to Mike and Dave, my fourth favorite paranormal radio show, guys. Duo? Guys. Whatever, it doesn't matter. They're moving up in the ladder. And I love you.
Oh! Kim, what are you doing?
Well, I'm telling Mike and Dave, it's time to get on the show.
Oh, well, the Odyssey Files starts now.
Good evening, ParaX. It is 7 o'clock on Monday night, which means you are listening to The Odyssey Files. I'm your host, Michael O'Neill. With me, as always, is Mr. Dave Soiring. Good evening, Dave.
How are you, Mike?
I'm doing all right. I spent, like, the entire day trying to sleep.
Well, It rained. I mean, so that's a nice time to get some rest, you know.
I didn't even know it was raining because when I got home from work, it was dark still. So yeah, that didn't help very much.
Well, sorry about that. I was on your side there for a minute, man, working for you.
No, so, I understand. I appreciate that.
But I'm excited about tonight because we are going on kind of out in left field with our topic.
Yeah, need I bring up our black holes?
You know,
show that.
No. This is going to be a good show. This isn't going to be one of them shows like where we just stumble through it because we don't know anything that we're talking about, but we try to sound intelligent. Like that one, we have two of those that I can think of off the top of my head, and they're mediocre at best. But tonight's show, while it's going to be a very unique topic, I think is going to be very insightful and have some good conversation.
Oh, I don't think you can not have a good conversation about our topics for tonight.
Yeah,
I've wanted to talk about this for a while. At least the second part. I didn't even know about the first part until this weekend. But it hasn't come to fruition until now. So I'm looking forward to it. I'd like to get your take on it.
Yeah.
And see if the people in the chat room who are listening, what they think of it.
Well, so, I would agree. And I kind of stumbled upon the first half of this because I wanted to do a tribute show to Art Bell, which we'll talk about a little bit. But somewhere down the road here, we're going to do a tribute show to Art Bell because to me, and to a lot of people, he's like the pioneer of what we do now. You know, he's the one who broke the ground for us to be doing paranormal talk radio and have people listening and be excited about the things that we're talking about that are weird and kind of not on the main page and, you know, talked about and discussed in the back rooms because nobody wants to admit that they saw something or heard something or something happened to them. And they don't want to be labeled. But that's okay. We don't mind being labeled.
No, not at all.
Nope.
I think that I agree. I don't know a lot about Art. I didn't get a chance to listen to his show a lot or like hardly ever, but I know what it, I knew what it was and I knew who he was.
Yeah.
And what he was doing, but I tend to believe that people are more willing to come out of the woodwork and talk about their experiences when they know they're not alone in them.
Correct. I would agree 100% on that.
You know, if you were to see a UFO and you were the only one to see it, you probably wouldn't want to talk about it. But if, you know, half the town of you know, 20,000 people are talking about this UFO, you're probably going to be like, yeah, I saw it too.
Yeah. Yep.
Because then if you didn't, then you're the loner.
Well, exactly. Then you're the weird one.
Yeah. Then it's like, well, are you crazy? How did you not see that?
Right.
I
mean, it stopped right above your house and it shot down two red beams and your dog went up in one of them. What do you mean you didn't see it?
Actually, that would be really sweet.
That would be sweet. Unless you really loved your dog, then that would really suck. that somebody took your dog. But I mean, yeah.
Right. But since the dog that lives in my home is not mine, but my renter's.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, UFOs always can come grab it anytime it wants.
Oh, yeah. Oh, in your situation, that would be sweet. I want to be there and see that little guy, you know, all 8 pounds of him floating up with his butt first going, you know.
I don't know if he would do that. I think he would, I don't know, maybe he'd still be asleep because that's all he really does. It's like a cat.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah. Except he's smaller.
Some cats, yeah, he probably is.
Yeah.
So the topic.
Moving on to the show.
So the topic for tonight that we first like to talk about is a case called The Entity. And like I said, and I don't know if anybody just like right away knows what we're talking about, because that's a very, very broad term. And that's a term we use for any type of negative spirit. We call them an entity. So yep. a case called The Entity really doesn't just narrow the mind to this specific case. Took place back in the 70s. Am I correct on that?
Yep, 1974 was when it started, yeah.
That's right, 1974-75. It involved a parapsychologist called Dr. Taft, and who, again, never heard of before this weekend. And what surprises me, considering a lot of people consider him also like the pioneer of like parapsychology and that type of thing. That's what I read anyway. But yeah, never heard of him, never heard of this case. But from what I understand now, it was quite a severe one.
Yeah, from what I've kind of followed and what I've known about it, and then going back and doing some research myself to kind of freshen myself up for tonight, it was severe. There's no doubt about the severity of the case. But it's also really interesting, and we'll get deeper and deeper into it. The case itself involves a woman who had a single mom who I believe she had four kids. I know she had three male sons, and I believe she had a female daughter. So I think she had four kids. And it took place in Culver City, California. I believe that she moved there after getting removed from, I'm going to say it was Sacramento. She was down on her luck. She couldn't afford to live where she was, so she moved to this little tiny town and basically moved into this really dumpy dive of a house. And, you know, that was what she could afford. That's what she could do, you know, to put a roof over the head of her kids and stuff. So we're going to mention her name. I don't think there's anything wrong with mentioning her name because it's on the internet and you can go back and look for it yourself. And she has passed away. She passed away in 1999. So her name was Doris. We won't say her last name. It's irrelevant. So doing some background on her and stuff, Doris was kind of rambunctious when she was a teenager. She was kind of removed from her house. Like, her parents didn't agree with a lot of the way she was living her life. One of the things that I found fascinating, and I know it's just coincidence, but for me, I see it again and again and again and again and again in cases like this. She was avid, you know, actively using Ouija boards. She was doing seances. It got to the point where she wasn't getting the results that she wanted. So she thought if she opened up her mind using alcohol and drugs in combination to basically, you know, be messed up on, you know, going in different directions between the booze and the pills, that she would be able to open herself up for these greater experiences and these seances and these Ouija board sessions. And, you know, I'm one of the biggest proponents for never using Ouija boards. And I just say, you know, if you're going to use alcohol and drugs and to be playing with a Ouija board, something tells me that she had stuff happening with her or to her prior to moving to this location. And I think it was just the perfect storm that came together when she got to this house is kind of what my take on it is. Okay, so they move in, right? They haven't been there long at all. One of the key things that I noted that I found very interesting was an older Hispanic lady showed up at the doorstep of the house, basically right after they moved in, and told her that the place was evil and that if they stayed, bad things would happen to them. Then she turned around and walked away, and nobody ever saw her again. So I don't know if that was some sort of spirit that showed up at the doorstep and was talking to her, if that was a real person and they just, for whatever reason, never saw her again. But she had reached out, Doris reached out to the parapsychology lab at UCLA that Dr. Barry Taff was part of at the time. And she said, there's some weird things going on in my house, and I'd like for you guys to come out and check them out. Now, we got to put this into perspective. Dr. Taff is very, very actively involved in psychic type of things and hauntings and spirits. He's a parapsychologist. He's a biomedical engineer. He's psychic himself. I knew he had, at that point, he had had 3,500 investigations under his belt. While Mike and I were just talking earlier, I happened to look and I saw that he had now 4,500 investigations under his belt, which for anybody who's an investigator, 4,500 investigations is a heck of a lot of investigations. So they invite her to the house. She invites them to the house. They go to the house. They check it out. The first time they go there, they notice a couple odd things, nothing completely out of the norm. They listen to what she has to say. She tells them that she is being physically assaulted and raped by a ghost in her house. So they leave it at that. They leave the property. They kind of reflect back on their notes and the things that they had listened to and what they had talked about. And one of the things that Dr. Taff said on one of Art Bell's shows, which is in the Greatest Hits kind of archive, is that at that point he was ready to stamp it with the big P, which was needs psychological counseling. Because even though he didn't disbelieve that it could be possible, he just didn't feel that it was happening in that situation. A couple weeks went by, she calls him back. She said, I've got some people that have been at my house and they've witnessed themselves some really weird things, some really seriously odd happenings. And they want to talk to you. Can you come back out? So the team went back out a second time. When they went back out, one of the things that Dr. Taft noted from the interview was that it was summertime in Culver City, California, in the 90s, hot. The house didn't have air conditioning of any type. So all the windows in the house were open. It was hot outside. When they walked into the house, it felt very cool. Like abnormally cool, like you would have the air conditioning on. They walked through the house, listened to what people were saying as they were doing their initial walkthrough kind of sweep type of thing. They got to the master bedroom, and in the master bedroom, they noticed that both the windows were open for cross ventilation. But his comment was that the master bedroom was so cold, it felt like a meat locker, and that you could almost see your breath. That's how different the temperature was in there. So they decided at that point, just because of the huge temperature swing, that something was up, something was going on. Some people who had witnessed things came over, talked to them and said, this is what we saw. This was what was happening. they said, okay, fine, we're already here. We're going to do, you know, a little bit of an investigation while we're here this time. They go in the bedroom. They figure that's kind of the hot spot because of the huge temperature change. They seal the place up so it's dark. And his comment was, it looked like a meteor show. It looked like there were comets flying by in the night sky. Little balls of light coming from every direction with little tails attached to them. They tried to get pictures of them. The first time that they saw that they witnessed it themselves visually, they couldn't get pictures of it for some reason. When they went back later, they redid the test again. The same thing happened. They did manage to catch one picture with one of these things in it that very clearly shows this like comet with a tail coming across of it. The thing that I thought was interesting was after the light show, there was a complete calm in the room, and Doris sat on the bed, and Dr. Taff was standing across the room with his partner, and they both stood there looking, and they saw a figure materialize directly on the bed behind Doris. It was a tall, very muscular, very dominant male figure that seemed to be very imposing. And it kind of stood over the top of Doris like, we, you know, she's mine. I'm here because this is what I'm going to take. This is what I own type of thing. Then, we're not going to just kind of hammer away at facts because we could do the facts for the whole show and then that gets boring. So I do wanted to lay some groundwork for kind of what was happening. So these were in the first two or three visits of this to this place. According to the things that I read and the things that I saw, Doris was repeatedly assaulted in her room and other parts of the house for a number of years. Her children witnessed it happening. They saw her getting thrown around. They saw physical harm being done to her, bruising type of like where she didn't run into anything, but like handprints grabbing her. I remember part of the thing that they were talking about was one of the times they went back to kind of do more study and to talk to her and to try to figure out exactly what was happening. They were sitting in the kitchen having conversation about the entity they had saw manifest in the bedroom, and the kitchen cabinet door flew open on its own, and a large heavy pan flew out of the cabinet all the way across the room. So whatever that was, 10 feet, 12 feet, I don't know. They didn't give the dimensions of the room, but all the way across the kitchen. So they got up immediately. They checked the cabinet door for any types of wires or strings or mechanisms. There was nothing there. They went over and looked at the pan to see if anything was attached to it. There was nothing on the pan. He chalks that up as a true type of poltergeist activity. And that's where this whole kind of case kind of led, you know, as you read in his review, like what, 30 years later, he's not sure that it was a spectral type of rape situation. He thought that maybe it was more of a aggressive sexual poltergeist type of thing.
So that's kind of what, that I did. I read was that right. He was kind of chalking it up to, for better terminology, she was doing this to herself, you know, unknowingly, that she was the one that was creating the psychokinetic poltergeist,
right,
that was then attacking her.
Right. Now that's an interesting concept if you think about that.
Well, it is, but, you know, and I know a lot of people don't do it the way I do, but like when I watch the Dead Files with Amy Allen, I almost use it as like a study guide,
yep,
to things that can happen. And I know she's encountered a lot of cases where a poltergeist made by a member of the house had been fed so much energy over so much time that it actually developed its own consciousness. And that was, you know, whatever, this person was throwing into it. that was the kind of, you know, poltergeist that it was. So, I mean, the fact that she did have such this reckless, you know, or whatever, childhood, you know, with booze and drugs and Ouija boards and abuse, I think I also read.
Yep.
Growing up with that, and then obviously being down on hard times and moving to this house, which, you know, might have actually had and probably does, or did anyway, some type of spiritual energy in it. I'm almost wondering if you're right on that. Is just this was this perfect storm to give this forming poltergeist its own type of consciousness to the point where it attacked her instead of, well, I guess I was gonna say instead of just throwing stuff around like it usually does, but what kind of gets me though is the comets, as you say, that's new. I've never heard. Yeah, I was. I've never heard of a case of having. Because when you first told me about that claim, you said it was like in the sky. So I thought they were like outside, seeing like a meteor shower or whatever. But it wasn't. Obviously, there was no meteor shower that night.
No, nope.
But that was actually inside the house.
It was inside her bedroom, and the interesting thing is when it first the first time that they witnessed it. They hadn't blackened out the room. So, like, you know, they had the blinds were drawn and stuff. But they saw these, like, flashes of light and then, like, these little balls moving around. And they thought, well, you know, being a good investigator, you're immediately going to dismiss that as being something from the outside coming in. And so what they did is they basically went and they basically stopped and they created a blackened environment. So they took and they basically blacked out the windows. So there was absolutely no light penetration whatsoever getting into the room. That's when they really started seeing them at a greater effect. And his comment was, it looked like a meteor shower in the sky. Like I was watching a meteor shower, but it was a miniaturized version and it was happening in the room, in the master bedroom. Well, in her bedroom. I guess this house was kind of a ramshackled shack, so I wouldn't call it a master bedroom, but in her bedroom. And going back on that a minute, you know, I would definitely say that something was already there with the fact that this house, I mean, the temperature change, he talks about the temperature change in such a way that it was almost like you had to really experience it for yourself to tell him that he wasn't a liar. Because it was that drastic of a difference. I mean, if it's 95 degrees outside in California and you walk into the master or into the bedroom of a house with the windows wide open and you can almost see your breath and you're chilled, and it's not just one spot, it's the whole room. Something's going on.
That is a little drastic.
Yeah. I mean, something is there drawing all of the energy. And then, I mean, all of the energy out of the room. And that's when they saw the manifestation of this, like, very large, male, aggressive, hulking type of masculine figure above her.
So do you think that that's the entity that she created?
Boy, if she did, man, I'm going to say yes, it probably is. But God, I only hope that I can only wish or hope that she didn't know what she was doing, because why would you create such a huge dominant male figure to abuse you? You know, there had to be something there. Like either she was having so much self-guilt or remorse, if that's true. Now, and we're going and my comments here are based on the fact that she created this poltergeist. So if that happened, she certainly didn't create a poltergeist to attack her and sexually assault her. I mean, why the hell would you do that? So the only thing I can think of is that she felt bad or something, and that type of that ton of energy with that kind of background got into this house, which already was ripe and ready for the picking. And then this thing kind of took that energy and manipulated it itself, like you just said, and became a conscious entity and knew that she could be a victim and knew that she was easy prey because of her background. Because, you know, if you remember what Chris Fleming said, there's nothing that a spirit doesn't know about you. You're totally transparent. There's nothing they can't see. They know all your feelings, all your thoughts. You can't hide. There's no lying to them, no poker face, you know. That's what he was talking about, having, you know, true values and true beliefs and stuff like that, and that you really have to be solid in what your beliefs are.
Yep. That's, I wish that we had some sort of follow-up, like, is there still activity in that particular shack?
Well, I know it's on it's on Braddock Drive in Culver City, California. I could probably find the house number. We could always go visit.
Yeah, no, you can't even like really get out of the Midwest. So
yeah,
getting all the way to California to look for a shack on Braddock, just to knock on the door and be like, "Excuse me, are you experiencing paranormal activity?"
Yeah, as their heads spin. Yeah.
Well, that I wouldn't need to ask that question then if their head was spinning around.
Yeah, probably not.
But I mean, you know, nothing in this case says it's demonic. So, I mean, I don't think there'd be any head turning. But
No, but they did think so at the beginning, though. So when he first investigated it, he clearly thought that this was a case of like an incubus, where there was this demonic entity that was sexually assaulting and raping this woman, you know. So a demon had come up, conjured itself up. Whether now, you know, and knowing some of her background, that's not hard to put those two things together, right? I mean, she's mixing drugs.
I would probably come to that conclusion as well.
Right, and I think I would too. I mean, just the fact that you're mixing drugs and alcohol and Ouija boards and seances, and you're really out of control at that point, in my opinion. You're really out of control. You do not have yourself grounded in any way, shape, or form, which means you're a victim to whatever the hell you bring up. Whatever shows up, man, there's nothing you can do to protect yourself. You're just wide open. And that's a dangerous place to be.
It's a hugely dangerous place to be.
Right.
But I still... Everything that I know about this case would lead to some sort of self-mutilation poltergeist, I guess, if you want to call it.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's guilt. You know, maybe subconsciously she felt she deserved this.
Right.
For whatever reason, I'm not a psychologist. I'm not judging her on what she did or did not do. But the comments. I don't know how they fit into any of this. Are they just, I can't think of the word. Are they just like, not subcategories, but are they just remnants of what's going on? Or is that something completely different? Because I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility to have this poltergeist that she has formed and still have something else that's going on, that's either feeding it in some form or just all by itself. I mean, you still have that Latino woman,
right?
Who, and what she said was, and you're right, she just kind of was like, this place is evil. You need to leave now. But she said, I lived here as a child. And this had, you know, and I experienced tons of bad, evil stuff. Right. You need to leave now. And then she just turned around and walked away.
Right.
But, I mean, you have all of that that would lead somebody to believe that there was something there previous to her moving in.
Absolutely. And I believe that there probably was. And how or why it's there, I don't think anybody's ever going to know that. But you got to remember, too, that the dominant male entity is the one that was aggressively having sex with her, okay, accordingly to her, against her will, all right? But there were three entities there. There were three distinct entities. There were two entities that would hold her down every time that this happened. So that her kids would see her arms get pulled out like this and stretched out on the bed, and they would see her hands getting held down as she was trying to move her arms while this other entity was physically raping her, assaulting her, having sexual intercourse, whatever, however you want to term it. But there was a total of three different entities in this case. And that was pretty well established and documented from the get-go. So you've got three male entities, one extremely aggressive, sexually dominant entity, and then two kind of entities that are there to help him succeed.
Okay.
And I think that might go hand in hand with what you were just saying, right? Is that, you know, you've got the one entity that's something from her consciousness that she creates as a poltergeist, and maybe the other two were already there. You know, maybe that's just two weaker type of demon type of entities that were already at that location that were causing havoc. And now this huge dominant negative male entity shows up, and these two little guys are like, hey, if you want our help, we're here. We've been here for a long time. We'll be more than willing to help you because we're going to feed off of what's happening too. You know, yeah, you're going to be doing the action, but the amount of emotional energy that's going to be dispelled here, you know, we're going to get to feast on that as well as you are.
So she's living in a paranormal frat house?
Well, kind of sounds like it. Regretfully, her kids were too, though. I mean, I'm not even going to go into the kids because that whole kid story is a whole different story I don't really want to talk about. But but and I will just say this, there is a book that was written on it. There's a second follow-up book. And there is a movie that was made that's – I don't think I've ever seen it, to be honest with you. But I've heard it's actually pretty good. And it, while, of course, Hollywood takes its, you know, liberties with this, the storytelling – I've heard that it's actually pretty good as far as giving an idea visually of what was really happening at this location. So it's on my watch list now. We'll have to watch it and kind of follow up and see what it did.
Yeah, no, I agree. So I was watching, and this kind of ties into why I wanted to talk about this case. I was watching A Haunting.
Yep.
Show, a great show on, what channel is it on now? He's switching channels.
Destination America, I think.
Is it Destination America?
I think it is. Say
Discovery Channel, but it's one. Yeah, they both start with D.
Yep.
So I remember one of the people saying that you never fully understand what it's like going through this until you've actually gone through it. I just think that this case, even though it happened back in the 70s, cases like this still happen today.
Oh yeah.
And in fact, I think they're more frequent now, or because of how open people are about the paranormal, in this day and age, we hear about it more. But this is not good. I mean, I know we're talking about it on a talk show, and this show is kind of, you know, yeah, it's built for entertainment purposes and whatnot, but these kind of cases are not supposed to be entertaining.
No.
I think one of the big reasons I want to talk about it is not that it's entertainment, but it's a warning of... And it's a reminder of the extreme horribleness, horrendousness that can befall people because of, I don't want to say the choices that they make, but in this case, probably had something to do with it, with the whole drinking drugs, Ouija board, seances.
Right.
That probably didn't help very much.
No, not at all. Right.
And it also goes to show that even if you're in your 40s now, and when you were, you know, 16, you messed around with a Ouija board and actually made contact with something, that doesn't mean you're out of the clear.
No.
Yeah. I know we've talked about this before, and the fact that spirits have nothing but time. they can come and go however they please and whenever they want.
So
I'm not saying anybody who's ever messed with the Ouija board is in like humongous danger, but just let it be a reminder and a warning to, if you don't know particularly what you're doing, don't mess with it. Cause it will at some point in time come back to bite you. And in some cases, that means that's literally.
Yeah, take it off the shelf. You know, Milton Bradley should not be selling the stupid thing anymore to the general population.
Well, I mean, a lot of people would say to you, it's nothing but a bunch of cardboard and a plastic planchet. And it's true. I mean, by itself, you set it on the table and that's all you did, it wouldn't do nothing but be a paperweight.
Correct. You're absolutely correct. So, just like you could stick a loaded pistol right next to it on the table, and that gun isn't going to kill anybody in the next 100 years either.
No, it's not.
So right.
I mean,
you're right.
But I understand your point. It's not so much that the board is evil or the board is in some way doing this, but you need to take it out of people's hands,
right?
Because it's the people that are doing this stuff to themselves, using it as a tool.
Right. See, it's the input of energy. It's the input of energy into the pistol that causes death. It's the input of energy into the Ouija board that opens things that you don't understand, can't control, and don't comprehend for 99.8% of the population. You know, And if you go back and look at Ouija boards and go way back and do the history of them, and there is a very, very definitive set of rules that need to be used if you're going to use a Ouija board. And they are not arbitrary, and you don't get to like say half of them and then just walk away from the table muttering the rest. I mean, there's a very distinct thing that you do. And I know this probably isn't the best comparison, but it popped into my head. Is if you've ever been to Roman Catholic Mass, it's a very distinct set of rituals. So if you ever go to Roman Catholic Mass, it is they do the same things exactly the same every single time. And there's a reason for that. It's a ritual. They're doing it, you know, to honor the belief in God, obviously, and Jesus, but it's also a ritual. It's been around so long that these are the rules and regulations pertaining to how you perform a Catholic Mass. So
before we go to commercial,
yeah.
One last question.
Yeah.
Cause you know about this case way better than I do. Did they end up helping her at all? Or did they just come to a conclusion and say good luck to you?
Yeah, pretty much. I believe, I don't believe that there was a lot of help that was given to her. I think she basically struggled and was terrorized her whole entire life until she passed away in 99. Regret.
Oh, well,
it doesn't have a happy ending. I don't think that she was ever cleansed of whatever it was that was attacking her. So yeah, it's not a good story. Yeah. Well, okay. It's not a great story, but you know what? I mean, in her defense, it needs to be told, because the story needs to be told. It's a great example, like you said, of the dangers that are out there that people just want to, you know, just go, whatever, you know. You just can't do that, man. 1974 is not that long ago. This is an extreme case. I read a lot of things. I've seen a lot of very famous people in our profession, and they say that there's only two cases, only two, that have freaked them out that they don't have an answer for. The first case is The Exorcist. The second case is The Entity. And that's all. And they've gone on record and said it. Of all the hundreds and thousands of cases that are out there that are documented, there's only two that have really screwed with people, and that's the two of them, is The Exorcist and The Entity. And, I mean, so what does that tell you about how powerful this stuff really is? And that's people who are knowledgeable and, you know, in the profession and are very well respected and renowned. I'm not going to call them experts because you know my thoughts on that, but yeah, but they're very well respected, you know, and they're very intelligent at what they do, and they, you know, and they have a lot of credibility, and that's, you know, that they feel that these two cases are really the two disturbing cases that are out there that never got any resolve to them, and I would agree.
Gotcha. All right, well, we're gonna go to commercial
and talk about something now that, and lighter.
Yeah. Now that we have completely depressed and sad all of you, I'm going to go and play a bunch of commercials and promos now. So you enjoy those, and we'll be back with, as they've said, a much lighter topic. So you're listening to the Odyssey Files on Para X.
Hey there. I don't know if you've heard, but there's a great new radio show on Para X. Two hosts, 1 hour, and too much fun. Stephanie and Heidi not only talk about the latest goings-on in the supernatural worlds, they live it. They want to hear from you. They want to help you understand and guide you. And they want you to tune in. So, grab a friend or come alone to gather around that metaphysical table with Heidi and Stephanie. If you're interested in the worlds of the unseen, tune in to The Gathering Radio Show, Tuesdays at 9 p.m. Eastern on Para X Radio.
Your source for everything paranormal, Para X.
Heidi, what are you listening to? Heidi. Oh, hey, Steph.
Hey.
What has your attention? Oh, I'm listening to Para X, the calling radio show. Have you ever heard of it?
No, I haven't. What's it all about?
Well, it's hosted by three guys, Jerry, Alan, and Will, and they talk about paranormal investigations, UFOs, cryptozoology, psychic phenomenon, all sorts of stuff.
Oh, well, it's kind of like The Gathering, but on Wednesday, right?
Yep, you got it.
The Calling Radio Show every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time only on Para X.
Hi, everybody. This is Chip Coffee, psychic and medium. I just wanted to let you know that when you're in the mood to get weird, you need to tune in to the Odyssey Files with two of the biggest weirdos I know, David and Michael. Take my advice. It doesn't get any weirder than that.
Amen, Mr. Chip Coffee. Amen. So, as he said, you were listening to the Odyssey Files on Para X. So the one that we are, the topic that we're going to talk about here, for the next, I don't know, 15 minutes or so. It is, and I've seen many, many different terms for it, but I really, really like the term ghosted.
Yeah.
And the term spirited lovemaking. And
in air quotes. Yeah.
And no, this one is in air quotes. But yeah, let's put them in air quotes. That's fine. But yeah, so basically, women and men, probably mostly women, who have claimed to have sex with spirit, consensual, not the bad stuff that was happening to Doris in our last topic. But so there's a woman, I love her name, Amethyst Realm, You know your parents were hippies if they
yes
they name you that one. 27 years old, considers yourself a spiritual guidance counselor.
Yep.
And at 27 years old, she has claimed to have sex with at least 20 different ghosts. And that not only does she prefer them to men, like living men, but is now her aspiration to become pregnant with a spirit's baby.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a goal. I mean, you gotta give her credit. That's a goal. I mean, not my goal.
Definitely not my goal.
Yeah.
Well, you and I can't get pregnant with the spirit's baby.
Well, even if I was a woman right now, I'm just not feeling the let's get pregnant with an apparition's baby.
How does that even? I don't even understand how that. I mean, I understand how it works, but how do you go to? I don't want to say 20 different locations, but how do you bring in 20 spirits to have sex with you? I don't understand how one would achieve that.
Yeah, I don't know, but I got to read this. I got to read this comment. So, all right. So one of the hosts of the show that she was on in England, Philip Schofield, had a couple of comments about the number of ghost lovers that she's had. And I quote, "I should imagine you've got quite a name for yourself in the spirit world," he said. "I would imagine they would be keen to visit you." Now, that's a little harsh. You know, that's a little harsh, but it's funny. And, you know, I don't know. I don't know the whole, like, having sex with ghosts thing. I don't even know if I believe that it's possible. I'm not sure. You know, I mean, did you read down a little bit on that article? Because it says, and this is interesting, is that Realm isn't the first person to claim to have gotten down with a ghost. Singers Bobby Brown and Keisha also say they've had supernatural sex sessions.
Yes. I believe I knew about Keisha, not so much Bobby Brown. But what I actually love here is this Amethyst says, "I've done a bit of research into phantom pregnancies. There's a possibility that it is a ghost in you, but people don't know how to carry it to full term." Has there been research done into phantom pregnancy? No, I think phantom pregnancies would mean, like, the woman doesn't know how she got pregnant. Isn't that? I don't assume that by phantom, they don't mean spirit, entity, ghost.
I'm kind of thinking that she means spirit, entity, ghost.
Okay, well then that goes back to my original question. Has there actually been research done to this? Like, has somebody said, "I would like money to conduct research into how a spirit impregnates a living person"?
Okay.
And somebody said, okay.
All right, so I'm going to go on. I do like that idea, and actually I'm going to apply for a grant to that topic. No, I'm kidding. So I'm going to go on record as saying this. So the first half of the show was my half, and you said, you know, "I really want to do a show on ghost sex." And I was like, hey, perfect. That'll be a segue from the first half of the show, and that's really all I know about it. So I'm just going to have to go with you. I don't know that there's ever been any, like, legitimate type of research done. I'm not really sure how you would do it.
Oh, okay. All right. Barbara has solved this for me, because I know I've heard the term before.
Okay.
Phantom pregnancy is a false pregnancy. It's a hormonal fluke.
Okay.
So you think you're pregnant, but you actually aren't.
Okay.
So for Miss Realm to say, "I've done research into phantom pregnancies," really leads me to believe she doesn't know what she's talking about.
Yeah, and you know, there's a psychotherapist here that they talked to, and she said her comment was, such hallucinations can be extremely vivid and bizarre. They can include tactile, visual, and auditory. And somewhere up above that, it talks about penetration too. but she said that what she said is, what is the majority of what brings this hallucination on is stress, anxiety, depression, and trauma make people more prone to this form of hallucination. So in the realm of this psychotherapist, basically she's saying that this lady's full of crap and that it's just basically a type of hallucination that's happening in a transition zone between wake and sleep, which kind of, you know, I mean, there is also, you know, the being held down on the bed, you know, can't move, being attacked type of thing that happens at that kind of exact moment, you know, between wakefulness and sleep. So maybe this is something similar. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know this woman, so I don't know what her situation is. It just seems that it's a little weird. Wow, can't believe I just said that about the paranormal.
That's weird.
But that is weird.
If you go in and you type in ghost sex, there's 21,400,000 results on Google.
Yeah, but how many of? I mean, because that's going to include any posting on sex and any posting on ghost.
True.
So I mean, there's not that many on ghost sex, but there are.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, there are, you know, ghost sex is a real thing. It's not weird. Woken by sex with a ghost from your ghost stories. We tried to have sex with ghosts, and here's what happened. I mean, that's like the top of the thing. There's actually a term for it. It's called spectrophilia.
Yes.
Which is sexual intercourse between living human beings and ghosts.
Yes. I actually came across that term when reading about the Entity.
I saw it there too. Yep.
So, yeah, and this isn't a one case thing. This is, you know, it's not a rare thing. I mean, there are a lot of people who have come out and said that they have had consensual intercourse with spirits.
Oh, absolutely.
And so I think I should explain my comment earlier. Because I'm probably going to get in trouble. Because I said it was probably mostly women that have had intercourse with spirits instead of men, and that is that has nothing to do with the whole like women are more prone to have sex with ghosts than men. But if you think about it, women typically would avoid. But women are less likely to have sex with living men in death and in life than, because men are always the horn dogs.
Or at least
the aggressive horn dogs. So the male entity is going to be far more likely to want to have sex with the female living person than vice versa.
Yes.
Is the only reason for my comment. So yeah, I wasn't saying that women are more spiritual promiscuous than men are.
Is that even a term? Spiritual promiscuous.
Promiscuence?
Well, I know what promiscuous is. I didn't know that the term spiritual went with promiscuous. That's kind of like ghost and sex going together. I'm learning all kinds of new terms tonight, man.
Trademark.
Yeah, exactly. We're stamping that one. Boom. $5 anytime somebody says it.
Spiritual promiscuous?
Yeah.
Spiritually promiscuous. There we go. That's the word I'm looking for. Yeah. So that, you know, and you almost, it was even in Ghostbusters, when Ray was having his
moment.
His moment. So I mean, it's not that this is a new thing. No.
And it goes back centuries. It's not like it just showed up in 1980. I mean, it's been around for a long time.
Sorry, I was reading the comment.
No.
I don't know how I feel about it. Maybe it's one of those things that, and I'm not inviting this here. So I mean, yeah, I'm a single guy, but I do have my limits. It's something that I would have to experience in order to understand, like the draw of it, the desire to do anything like that.
Well, see, here's the only problem I would have with that. And that goes right back into the same realm of their, you know, children's spirits type of thing. If this, like, extremely seductive, beautiful, I'm going to satisfy every pleasure you have woman shows up as an apparition in your house, I'm going to tell you that it's probably a succubus. That it probably isn't like the reincarnation of Marilyn Monroe and Raquel Welch and, you know, 28 other gorgeous, stunning, beautiful women, Jane Mansfield, and they're all kind of got conjured in together, and they showed up at your house and said, I'm going to rock your world tonight, Mike. I'd be a little leery. I mean, it'd be cool. I'd be happy for you, but I'd be a little leery. So
I like how you didn't talk about you. It was all about me.
Yeah, no. I'm good. I don't need any ghostly apparition showing up wanting to have intercourse. No, I'm good.
So, we don't have enough time. I was going to tell you about it. I actually mentioned it before, but I think it's a great idea that I might want to actually look into, and that's paranormal speed dating. So, Barbara posted the thing for me for ghost singles,
yep.
Which I'm assuming is a dating website for people who love the paranormal, I guess. I don't know. I've never heard of that before.
Nope.
Site before.
Another new term.
So I'm thinking paranormal speed dating. So you go into this big, big location like Edinburgh Manor, and each room that has activity, you go in and you get like 10 minutes to do an EVP session with the person. And then at the end, you have to decide who did the best EVP sessions with you. And then you get to go on dates and stuff.
All right, I'm in. That sounds like fun.
Apparently that matches you with a ghost. Sweet. Dave, we got our in.
All right. I'll document it. You're in.
So, I don't know. That's our show pretty much, and even a minute early. So go me.
Okay. I just got to mention this. All right. So, everybody who's listening to this, including you, Mike,
still listening,
BuzzFeed Inc. We tried to have sex with ghosts and here's what happened. You got to read this story. I just happened to flip through it. My God, they have how to seduce a ghost guidelines, the steps, what to do, what not to do, with our instructions. This is what happened. We're giving permission, blah, 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 blah. They're summoning. You got to read this whole thing. It's just beautiful. Two women decided to get laid by ghosts, and they wrote and documented the whole entire thing. It's pretty funny.
That's beyond awesome.
It's pretty funny. So, yeah.
All right, everybody. That does it for us tonight. Tune in next week.
Yeah.
When we will have more rousing topics.
Yeah. Absolutely. Have a great Monday.
All right. Have a good night, guys.
Night.